It's Politics with Amy Walter on The Takeaway. Since November, we've been talking to the newly elected members of Congress, checking in with them before they're sworn in on January 3rd. This week, I sat down with
Cliff Bentz. I'm the congressman-elect from Oregon Congressional District 2.
Bentz is a Republican, and like his predecessor, Congressman Greg Walden, he'll be the only Republican serving in Oregon's delegation. I started out by asking him to describe his district.
Well, Oregon 2 is one of the largest congressional districts in the United States. There's much debate about exactly where it fits on the list, but I think it's number 7. It's just a fraction less than 70,000 square miles. So it's, as my predecessor, Congressman Walden, likes to say, bigger than any state east of the Mississippi. And then he has many other means of trying to show how large the district is. But it takes about 7-8 hours to drive across it. Mm. It's a beautiful space, a very, very varied in how its geography exists, and it's a beautiful place if you like lots of open space, because we have a lot of it. Wonderful people in it, ranchers, farmers. We have a really, really wide variety of folks. We have the Columbia River on the north side. We have California on the south. We have Nevada, Idaho toward the east. It's a very, very different when it comes to the people that live within it, which I like.
You know, you're coming into a Washington, D.C., where Republicans are in the minority, though by a smaller margin than many had expected. What can you tell them, and what did you learn about being in the minority party where, you know, in your case, you had a governor that was a Democrat come to Washington. It's the president who's the Democrat. What did you learn about working with the majority party, bipartisanship? What worked? What didn't work? Should we throw our hands up and say it's never going to work? You can't cross party lines these days, or what?
I hope it's not the latter. I would say that what I learned is that you have to rely, if you're in the minority, a lot on the majority, on what they're going to allow you to do. I mean, it's kind of up to them. And I learned in the last couple of years I was in the Oregon State Senate that the politics of Portland, Oregon had made it extraordinarily difficult for my Democrat friends in the Senate to even allow me as a Republican to be at the table. I was the co-chair of the Carbon Committee, the so-called Carbon Committee, and I was frozen out of the discussions for 5 months on a very, very serious cap and trade bill, one of the more aggressive approaches to managing carbon that I've seen. And I was just not allowed. I wasn't allowed in the room. And that was because my Democrat friends told me later, the folks that put them in office back in Portland didn't want a Republican in the room. And so they didn't allow me in. And ultimately that meant that we Republican senators walked out to deny the Democrats a quorum and thus prevented the cap and trade bill from passing. But I will share with you, and I've told it to everybody, that that's not the right way to do business. The right way to do business is try to sit down and work these things out. But if you're not at the table, it's pretty tough to do. But the thing I learned when I was in Salem is that if I worked really hard to know more about the issues than anybody else at the table, generally that had a value. And generally people wanted to hear what you had to say. And if they all viewed the problems as a common problem, as opposed to just somebody's problem, one side or the others, then they wanted good thinking and hard work. And so I'm going to take that thought to Washington, D.C., and hope that working hard and showing up and thinking and being civil will work.
I think a lot of people are hoping for the same thing. And it's clear that, you know, that's something that President-elect Biden is also counting on and is something that he campaigned on. But he also campaigned on a pretty aggressive climate agenda, including, you know, zero net emissions by 2050. I'm wondering, as we think about the issues of climate going forward, the kinds of things you think you could support or work with Democrats or work with an administration getting actually accomplished? Like, where are the places Democrats, Republicans could come together on this?
There are many things in the climate space that work for large parts of my district that look suspiciously like adaptation. So irrigation, for example, is a means of adapting to a dry climate. And we irrigate an awful lot of CD2. And so if you use words like adaptation and sequestration and innovation, those words resonate with people on both sides of the aisle. And if you can show people that you can save them money by using electric cars, for example, rather than paying for fuel, they'll knock you down to get to an electric car. And there's many, and this is proven by, if you go to a hardware store now, how many people are buying electric drills that have a cord on them? No, they'll be buying drills that have a battery because they're so much more convenient. So you need to find those, and there are a lot of them as people get smarter about all these things and innovation happens, that you can find common ground and you can move forward. On one side of the aisle, you'll be saying, hey, this is because it's saving you money. On the other side of the aisle, people will be saying, hey, it's reducing carbon. And those are the kind of opportunities that exist all over the place. What ends up happening, people get caught up in the politics of it. And that's too bad because that makes it very, very difficult.
Well, and your district unfortunately suffered incredible devastation with wildfires this year. Talk about how the issue of climate change has impacted those, the kinds of fires that you saw, and whether that's the kind of thing that can also bring Democrats and Republicans together, that you may be a Democrat sitting in Portland, Oregon, but you see these wildfires going on in the district you live in and say, well, gosh, there has to be a way we can together make sure stuff like this doesn't happen anymore.
One of the problems in talking about forests, most people, myself included, have a very difficult time understanding the sheer scale of the problem, because probably if you look at Northern California, Oregon, Washington, you have about 100 million acres of forest. And this year, 1 million of those acres in Oregon burned up. I think 3 million down in California. And that means we still have 96% of the forest to burn. And we don't want it to burn. But the sheer size of the problem is extremely hard for people to understand. Mm-hmm. The number that was thrown about and how we would try to address this issue just in Oregon was $44 billion. Well, we don't have $44 billion. And the other thing that generally is overlooked is how long this problem is going to take to fix. If we stopped generating carbon tomorrow, it would be 40 years before things perceptibly changed. And so what we have to do now is address the immediate problem. And then people can say, well, it's drier because of climate change. Let's assume it. If it's going to take 40 years to address the issue, and that assumed we stop generating carbon tomorrow. This is a long-term problem that needs immediate attention and long-term attention. Mm. And so two approaches. And the first one is to do a risk analysis to let people know what they're facing and how likely it is that their house is going to burn up. We lost 2,700 homes down in Medford, and we lost 600-700 homes just outside of Salem to fire. The one down in Medford was not so much forest involved. It was a different issue, but still, those kinds of risks are up and down the West Coast, and we need to let people know what they need to do to save themselves in the short run. In the long run, that's a great big huge issue, and it needs so much work. And it's not just one solution. It's going to be dozens of solutions to try to address this issue. It's huge. One thing I want to point out why you asked this question, a lot of people don't understand that the additional CO2 in the air is driving much more aggressive growth of the forest, 12, 13, 14% more growth than used to be the case, just because there's so much more CO2 in the air that trees are busy, sequestering. And so this makes the problem even more difficult to deal with. Mm-hmm.
You raise a really good point, which is there is a short term and the long term. And you've been in politics for a little while now, and you're coming to Washington. How challenging is it to get political figures to think outside of just the immediate short term?
Well, it's hard. And social media has made it even more difficult. When you come at it from the my standpoint, having spent so many years in this space, you realize that a short-term solution is really defrauding the people you're representing. It's really not, you're not doing your job. So it's that short-term gain is just not worth it. And somehow you've got to tell people, hey, this is a long-term play, and we're all going to have to work together over time, and eventually we'll get this problem solved. But boy, our whole society seems to be, they want immediate gratification. And this COVID situation is a great example. People being forced to actually wait. It's a real lesson.
How has COVID impacted you and your constituents? I mean, obviously we know the toll that it's taking nationally, but if you are talking to folks in your community specifically, how are they processing this moment?
Well, it's a huge challenge. In fact, the local restaurants in my little town asked me yesterday if I would please come to a meeting with them Sunday at 2 p.m. up in a little coffee shop. We used to go there every morning, and we don't now because you don't get to go in. And this is true across the entire landscape of restaurants in Oregon, and they're going broke, and their lives are being destroyed. And it's not just that space; it's all kinds of spaces like that. And these people are desperate, and they're saying, "Hey, we know you're not in the state government anymore, but you know all of us. Would you please come down and give us some hope?" And it's really, really challenging. This is really bad, and of course we want the work that they're doing in Congress now to try to help some of these people bridge over the next year, because I think it's going to take that to get back to where we all want to be. Some people are doing really well in this situation, and a whole bunch are doing really, it's really bad. And so how we try to help is a real question. And, you know, I'm not sure what I'm going to say when I go down there on Sunday, other than I'll do my best to help.
Congressman-elect Mentz, I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with me. I wish you the best of luck. Please stay safe out there.
Thank you so much. And of course, you also.
Cliff Bentz is the Republican Congressman-elect for Oregon's 2nd Congressional District. To hear an extended version of this conversation or any of our freshman conversations, check out the podcast or go to politicswithamywalter.org/freshman.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.